DW Africa Link. South Sudan, the world's youngest country, announced on January 7th that it is resuming oil production and exports. Now, this marks a significant milestone in the country's economic recovery efforts. So how did South Sudan get here? Is the government able to resume production smoothly? And how could that benefit ordinary South Sudanese people? That's what's coming up. I am Eddie Maika Jr., and you are welcome to Africa Link, the podcast connecting you to the stories that matter.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Now, when South Sudan became independent, it took over about three quarters of the oil reserves of the old Sudan, while Khartoum retained control of all pipeline and export facilities. But the oil business faced many challenges and hardly benefited the ordinary person. The resumption of oil production follows the Sudanese government lifting a nearly year-long force majeure due to the ongoing conflict in Sudan. An initial target of 90,000 barrels per day is expected. Now, on paper, that seems great. But challenges remain. For more on this, I am joined by Boboya James Edmond, an independent political and economic analyst based in Juba, South Sudan. I also have Patrick Oyet, a freelance journalist in South Sudan. Hello, gentlemen. Welcome to the program. Boboya, what does the resumption of oil production mean for the people of South Sudan?
Yeah, so the resumption of the oil through Sudan, the South Sudan oil, means good news for the government of South Sudan in a way that the government has been struggling for many, many months since the conflict in the Sudan erupted. And because of loss of financial revenue and loss of, you know, significant other resources in South Sudan, the resumption of oil then becomes a good news for the government of South Sudan, because the government of South Sudan is currently struggling in every part of, you know, sectors that are more crucial in a way. But to the people of South Sudan, who are the real citizens of this country, the resumption of oil is not actually been, you know, a good news for them, because historically the oil has been utilized to increase pandemic corruption in this country, to increase conflict, and to use power to abuse various sections of the society. So in South Sudan right now, when you speak to the people, whether it's a good news, they will tell you it can only be a good news if this oil resources is going to finance the national budget, and if it's going to be managed in a transparent and accountable manner, in a way that it addresses the current worsening condition of the people of South Sudan. And some of those conditions they're talking about is increased poverty. If the oil can be utilized to eradicate poverty, it would be good. They're talking about there's reduced, you know, income levels in South Sudan since the conflict started. So if the oil can help in addressing imbalance of income, would be something that is important for the people of South Sudan. And also, the other thing that people of South Sudan want to see this oil contributing to is that the proceeds of the oil needs to go into guaranteeing the equitable distribution of wealth in this country, because that's one of the biggest problems in this country.
Right.
And also, the overall aspect of oil contributing to achieving a decent standard of life for the people of South Sudan, and how they can go about with their level of options in this country. Those are the major issues that the oil needs to address. Whether this is going to happen or not is the skepticism of the people of South Sudan in terms of this oil resource.
Right, right. Patrick, you've been talking to people on the ground. Boboya has really outlined what people expect. But what are they telling you? How optimistic are they that this would be a blessing rather than a curse?
So many people now are hopeful because, as Boboya already put it right, many institutions of government are almost not working because of lack of money. This is basically because civil servants have gone for a year now without pay. The government, of course, blames this on the fact that oil was not flowing. But as also stated already, even when oil was flowing, we had seen that the economy was not doing well. Inflation was rising even when oil was flowing. So people's purchasing power had really reduced. But one other thing that now at least is giving hope to people is that when oil was not flowing, the taxes on non-oil revenue had become so high. You know, the National Revenue Authority, whenever you receive money from wherever you receive in your account, when you withdraw, you see the taxes, the amount of money being deducted from your account is very high. The same goes to like the market. You know, when goods are brought in, there are so many government agencies that are coming to collect taxes, ranging from city council to, you know, the smaller government units to the National Revenue Authority, all collecting money in the name of oil is now not flowing. So they are trying to expand the tax base. And in that process, they are taxing actually the people who have not received salaries, the people who, when they come to the market, their purchasing power is very low. And then because of high taxes, goods are very expensive. So there has been, and there still continues to be, really, really suffering. And of course, the lack of transparency in the oil sector is very, very concerning, in as much as our laws, when you look at the petroleum laws, you look at the Petroleum Management Act, it really says we aspire to be like Norway, meaning we have to be transparent in the way we conduct our businesses. We need to know how many barrels we sell per day and how much money is coming in, and also where the money is going. This has not been happening. Money comes in, nobody knows how much money comes in, and nobody says anything to the citizen. And this goes on also to the non-oil revenue that is being collected, that I just mentioned. The money is being collected, but we do not know how much money is collected in a month. Right. Some people, including the president, said at one point last year that the money collected from non-oil revenue is enough to pay civil servants. But civil servants have been going without pay. We do not know how much, is never announced. So that's a challenge. The challenge is, even if oil is going to flow, many people are concerned that still things may not really be that good.
Okay. Yeah. So what I'm gathering is clearly mixed reactions. People want to be hopeful, but there's not much to be hopeful about. Let's take a step back a bit, Boboya, as I come to you. It's not too long ago that South Sudan was drilling its own oil and exporting. So what happened? Why did it end? And sort of give us a bit of a chronology about where we are at now, from then till now.
The country has been, you know, when it gained independence, had a very good prospects of, increasing the oil resources in terms of, you know, working with international partners to ensure that the oil is becoming a resource that is benefiting every South Sudanese, and also attracting, various technology to help in, you know, getting its own oil to become like, you know, a biggest commodity in South Sudan. But because of poor governance, because of weak, you know, institutions, because of lack of political will to emphasize on the benefits of oil for developing South Sudan, and also even developing the oil infrastructure itself, it has contributed to a big mess within the oil industry. And there are these conversations that happens when South Sudan declared austerity measures, when they had a conflict with Sudan, where they would wanted to have a new pipeline to go to the port of Lamu in Kenya. Mm. And then the complications between, you know, China and Russia coming in and other actors who sort of say, this is not going to happen, right? So because of some of those issues, the international community, especially the Americans and the other countries in Europe, decided to decampaign, you know, the oil in South Sudan as not the best, you know, process, because it's not providing support to the government and the people of South Sudan. And this has actually, you know, caused a lot of problems within the companies themselves in terms of, you know, coming into investing in South Sudan. Right. And that's the reason why in of recent, we have one of the companies that actually pulled out from the oil investments in South Sudan. And there's supposed to be Savannah Energy company that was more UK-based to come and take over from Petronas. But then that was also discouraged because the contractual agreements has complicated the matter. And that's the reason why last year alone, the government of South Sudan lost $1.2 billion of oil deals that was, you know, taken out by Petronas assets in South Sudan. And that is more catastrophic.
Right.
And because of that, it has made the government of South Sudan and South Sudan as a country, as a member of the East African community, the weakest and the weakest financially in this country. For example, I'm just give you, when talk about the economic prosperity within East Africa region, right? From the budgetary perspective, Tanzania has $18.9 billion of the national budget for this year. Mm-hmm. Uganda has $19.2 billion of the national budget. Kenya is leading with $31 billion. Rwanda, that is very small, has $4.3 billion. Burundi, that is really has no proper resources, has $1.5 billion. But South Sudan budget, for example, if you look at what happened in the last year budget, they only have $1.3 billion, you see? And it's the biggest country within the region and also a country with the oil resources. But right. it continues lagging behind when it comes to national budget support and the realization of proceeds that comes from the oil to the budget. Yet,
right.
98% of the oil before was, you know, was coming from the oil to support the GDP and the government of South Sudan.
Right. So you've touched on a lot of issues and challenges which, you know, affected the previous oil production and exports in South Sudan. Is that to say that all these issues have been ironed out? I mean, issues like also the sort of, you know, friction between South Sudan and Sudan. Again, most of the pipelines of the oil production is also passing through Sudan, although South Sudan has a big chunk of the oil on its side. So have all these different issues that you've mentioned been resolved? Is that why we are hearing that oil production is resuming, or what's the deal?
The deal here is that the government of South Sudan is getting more broke. The government of Sudan is getting even more broker. So to be able to come out and get some money, additional money, it's important for them to open their pipe so that they can be able to get something at least in the pockets of the two governments. And the reason why I'm saying the government is broke, especially the government of South Sudan, is that since the conflict started in Sudan and the oil went down, South Sudan GDP has contracted by 5%. And this is only, for example, with one measure, which is the Dar Blend oil pipeline, because of its damage. So that's the reason why South Sudan only able to lose 5%. I'm talking about 2 or 3 months ago. By
right.
now, maybe we talk about 7% of contracts with the GDP of South Sudan. Again, the oil and gas sector in South Sudan outputs has reduced by 70%. So this is significant in terms of government losing oil resources. And for many, many months now, the government of South Sudan struggled to improve its economic governance and also the ability to ensure that there's efficient, you know, delivery of vital goods and services to the citizens. So because of this, there's a lot of, you know, pressure going on here. You know, people want to come out and protest, and the government is more scared because one of the biggest issues is payment of army, civil servants, and other sectors in South Sudan. Mm. If the government fails to begin to pay salaries for these people moving forward, I think it's going to be more difficult for the government even to come out and explain itself. I think some of those are major factors. That's the reason why the government really wanted to do that. But however, there's also a lot of you know, issues between the RSF and the Sudan Armed Forces, because some areas are controlled by the RSF and some areas are controlled by the Sudan Armed Forces. So there's need for compromises. So one of the biggest, actually, my doubt in this process is that the oil proceeds are likely to be used for bribing the government of Sudan and the RSF so that they don't completely block the oil from flowing.
It doesn't sound like the conditions are right for South Sudan to resume oil production, or is it just me?
I mean, to the government in terms of wanting money, of course, but for the people of South Sudan, it's not, I mean, necessary. Actually, there are a lot of advocates who say now that the oil is the biggest curse in South Sudan. So basically, what the government needs to do is to venture into non-oil revenue. And that's why there's been a lot of emphasis on other resources such as gold mining and the forestry, non-oil revenues coming out from businesses and the trade, so that the government begin to build capabilities within some of those sectors, and then oil can just only come to boost those sectors because those sectors are the most sustainable required sectors for the future. If especially when you talk about the conversation about renewable energy and the green energy and the issues about stranded assets and critical minerals and the idea that oil is no longer the critical mineral that is required. So I think from that perspective, it's important for the government to begin think about other revenues. But the problem that I'm talking about here is that even if there's going to be revenue coming from any other sector in this country, there is no proper public finance management processes that this money goes into a one coffer and therefore is used for delivery of services as required by the constitution, by processes that are required in this country in accordance with international human rights frameworks that can bring democratic economic governance to this country called South Sudan.
Right. Wow. Patrick, let me bring you in here. We've heard a lot about what Boboya has said. I mean, it's almost speaks to the resilience of the people of South Sudan because there's clearly a lot of challenges. You talked about people not being paid for close to a year. We also know there's, the country still dealing with some sort of insecurity. I mean, since its independence in 2011, they've endured some sort of insecurity. How are people surviving through all of this?
Well, it's really very difficult for people. Survival is now hand to mouth, basically. Many of I'm sorry to say this, but it's a fact that many of our security officers now have to also work as taxi drivers during the evening hours when they're off duty, or motorcycle taxi drivers to try to raise money to keep their families. And that is the same also for many civil servants, that you have to find something outside that you do in order to earn a living. But of course, as James just said, there are several things, including the issue of environment is not properly managed. We've also seen in the oil producing areas, children being born deformed, a lot of issues to do with environmental issues that are not properly managed. And many people had hoped that the halt in oil production would provide an opportunity for the government to work on something like that, so that when the production resumes, the negative impact of the environment that is coming from oil production is addressed. We have not seen this being discussed. There was an environmental audit that was done. We've not seen the results. And then also, of course, South Sudan people had believe that the halt in oil production would have provided an opportunity for the government to find a way of refining oil. Because, as you correctly said earlier, there are still several issues between Sudan and South Sudan. For example, there are areas that are claimed by both countries. For example, Abyei. Abyei is claimed by Sudan and claimed by South Sudan, and many other places along the line, along the borderline. And these issues have not been resolved. So the agreement between Sudan and South Sudan is a marriage of convenience. It's just because both countries are broke, so they have to find a way of getting money so that they leaders in the gov in those governments can continue to be in power. But there are several issues, so many issues that are not resolved. Another thing that the people of South Sudan that I talked to have also mentioned is that they had hope that South Sudan would focus now on building refineries. Because if you look at the region, in almost the whole of Eastern and Central Africa, South Sudan is lucky to be the leading oil producer in the in that region. When you look around, Uganda has oil, Kenya has mentioned, and maybe Tanzania, a few countries are saying they have discovered oil, but they have never entered the stage of production. But South Sudan has been producing oil for years. It could have provided leadership in the region in the oil sector, therefore producing also refined products, refined oil, and also petrochemical industries, and sell this to the neighboring countries. This opportunity is also being missed because of the rush to try to get some quick money through the sale of crude. So there are several issues. And the issue, as also the Boboya has said, there are areas that are still controlled by the rapid support forces in Sudan, the paramilitary, and of course areas controlled by Sudan armed forces. These pipelines go through. That's why the pipeline was actually damaged because of the fighting in Sudan and the production had to stop. But there is no guarantee that this pipeline will not be damaged again in the future. Yes.
So what are we seeing now, Patrick? Are there any signs at all that this time when South Sudan resumes oil production, that somehow things will be different from before and that somehow it will benefit the ordinary people?
Well, there is a bit of hope because civil servants believe that with the production of oil and selling, there will at least be money to pay them. However little the money is good if it is paid on time. They can budget and take care of their families. That is basically the only hope. However, the challenge is also we have a very large government due to the peace agreement, which of course has brought some stability. However, the government is very large and a lot of money also is consumed by this very large government. So you find that services are not majorly provided. The money is all going to be being consumed by the large government. So there is also hope that with the coming of oil money, there could be some infrastructure development, especially roads, because our roads are really, really, really poor. Road network is very poor. There is need for really roads to be upgraded or some are tarmacked so that food can come to the major cities where people are living. So there is a bit of hope that the money will come and somehow things will improve. And also the taxes that are so high on non-oil revenue will reduce so that people can have at least a breathing space. So there is hope in spite of all these challenges.
Boboya, as we wrap this up, what needs to happen now to make the situation better than it is and to ensure that the ordinary people of South Sudan actually benefit from the resumption of oil production?
What needs to happen right now is that the government needs to come out with a plan, because one, the people wanted to see is that there must be a service delivery strategy in this country. People want to see that support that comes from the oil must go into supporting agriculture. It must support road construction. There's a conversation that the budget that is financed has to support the private sector so that the economy begin to grow. And that is where you create a lot of employment in this country. We want to make sure that this money goes to supporting quality health services and also education so that people can begin to get the skills that are required to participate in the economic development in this country. So those are the basic things that need to happen. But there must also be mechanism of addressing corruption in this country so that people begin to, you know, fear that if I steal, I will end up in jail. This is not happening in this country. So there must be a political will to address some of those issues quickly and even now.
Patrick Oyet, you have the final words.
The government has to really have priorities, because at the moment, many people do not see like the government has priorities. They don't know what is the government even prioritizing. Salaries are not paid. Services such as health services are not properly delivered. Roads, infrastructure are not properly done. So the priority has to be clear. And people have to know, and people have to be encouraged also to participate in coming up with solutions to the problems that we face, which at the moment is not there. In other places, when you go, people tell you our priority is unity and peace, and everybody works towards that. We do not know what our priority is. So the government really needs to do much. In addition, strengthen the anti-corruption unit. At the moment, the anti-corruption unit does not even have an office because they've been thrown out of offices where they were renting because they could not even pay rent. And people steal at will. You steal, tomorrow you're sacked, you go home, and there's no accountability. So without accountability, without priority, we are not going anywhere. Even if the oil money comes, we may have some hope, but we will not know where the money will go. That's what I can say.
Right. And I, to be honest, I'm still really going over the fact that close to a year, people have not been paid. Public servants have not been paid. And you touched on how they are coping. It just can't be easy. And this surely cannot go on for long, can it?
It cannot. It's painful. It's painful for people who wake up every morning to go to work, and at the end of the month, you don't receive anything, and you continue and continue and continue for a year. It is really, really tough.
Right. I can totally imagine that. Thank you very much for sharing your insights with us. Buboya James Edmond, independent political and economical analyst based in Juba, South Sudan. Also, Patrick Oyet, freelance journalist in South Sudan. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
Oil accounts for over 90% of South Sudan's exports and government revenue. The resumption of its production and exports is also expected to increase foreign exchange inflows that could stabilize the South Sudanese pound and reduce inflation. While it offers a lifeline to the economy, sustained economic recovery will require careful management of oil revenues, implementation of economic reforms, and efforts to address underlying structural issues in the country. So what do you think? Will this be a blessing or a curse? Join the discussion on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Listen to us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. Don't forget to click follow so you never miss an episode. This show was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. And I am Eddie Micah Jr. Thanks for listening.
DW. Made for Minds.